Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 56. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. In this verse, Kamsa speaks more clearly his intentions. What should I do about Hari, Tasmin? Is it proper to kill him while he is still an embryo? No, because those interested in their own welfare, Artha Tantra, do not destroy their own good name. By killing him now, my reputation of prowess will be destroyed. But if he is born and grows, then I fight with him, whether I am victorious or defeated, my glory will remain intact. Killing a child in the womb is not an act of bravery. Not only will it destroy my fame, but Dharma also gets destroyed. Thus Kamsa says that by killing a woman, a sister, a fetus, fame, power, and life, and fetus, I guess fame, power, and lifespan will be permanently lost. This temporary restriction on his evil nature was because of fear. Thus he began thinking of his reputation through careful discrimination. Right, so the taste of fear, that was how he was absorbed in Krishna. And then that caused his, you know, contemplating these positions that are there based on Dharma, how it would affect him. Srila Prabhupada adds, according to Vedic principles, a woman, a Brahmin, an old man, a child, and a cow should never be killed. It appears that Kamsa, although a great enemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was aware of the Vedic culture and conscious of the fact that the soul transmigrates from one body to another, and that one suffers in the next life according to the karmas of this life. Okay, so he's understanding this. It's just the training. That's the point of the Vedic culture, is these things are known. Unfortunately, being a demon, he's not taking to the higher principle of trying to see it in a positive light of God consciousness. He means the effect is he's God conscious, but he's using it as a negative how to maintain his material desires. Okay? Kamsa continued thinking, a person who is very cruel is regarded as dead even while living. For while he is living, or after his death, everyone condemns him. And after the death of a person in the bodily conception of life, he is undoubtedly transferred to the hell known as Andatama. Srila Prabhupada comments, it is said that a cruel person like a butcher is advised not to live and not to die. While living, a cruel person creates a hellish condition for his next birth, and therefore he should not live. But he is also advised not to die, because after death he must go to the darkest region of hell. Thus, in either circumstance, he is condemned. In this verse, the words, So being cruel then is not part of the culture. You see, in the Vedic culture, it's always based on compassion, because compassion is the natural quality of the soul. Right? In the spiritual world, that quality will be manifest as friendship. Right? So Krishna is rasa, right? So all the five rasas are with Krishna, but with all other living entities other than Krishna, the relationship is always that of friendship. Does that make sense? So maybe higher, lower, equal, intimate, like this, but it's always friendship. Then in the material world, then you may have friendship with someone who's equal, compassion to juniors, and then indifferent to those who are, you know, not, properly practicing the culture. That makes sense. So that compassion is the natural inherent quality of the soul. So that's why it's something to be considered. So cruel individuals aren't appreciated by anyone. like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, in this case, they need no compassion,
For those who are inimical to you know, God consciousness, the Vedic culture, and that, then one is not. Did I use the word inimical?
Indifferent.
Indifferent. Should be indifferent. So in other words, you just don't deal with them. So you're friendly with those who, you know, are you know, on an equal status. You're compassionate with those who are junior, and you're indifferent to those who are outside of that. In this verse, the words ganta, tamon, dam, tanu, mani no, dhruvam are very important and require extensive understanding. Srila Jiva Goswami in his Vaishnava Toshani Tika says, tatra tanu, mani naf, papina iti dehatma, budyaiva papa, dhinivesho bhavati. One who lives in the bodily concept, thinking, I am this body, involves himself by the very nature of this conception in a life of sinful activity. Anyone living in such a conception is to be considered a candidate for hell. So if one's focus is on I am the body, then one's going to be engaged in sinful activities. That's why the Vedic culture is considered a positive culture, because it's based on the principle of understanding one's soul. How much one realizes it, how much one uses for that, that's another thing. But at least that principle is there. So then the higher authority, the laws, all these things can be appreciated. Because otherwise, then if one doesn't, I'm the body, so it's good for the body, that's actually what's important. If I understand I'm the soul, then what's good for the soul, I understand, is ultimately important. Yes?
There's more weight given on consciousness than activity.
Yes, because an activity, just like I cook. So what's that activity? Is it good or bad? Is it pious, impious? Is it devotional, or is it, you know, non... How do you define that? By the consciousness. That's the whole thing. So that's why consciousness is the most... Because the soul is consciousness. The soul is not the technique. Krishna is the technique. But so, seeing things in connection with Krishna, that's the natural position. Seeing things not in connection with Krishna, that's not a natural position. But that's the material perspective. That's why we say many times they'll hear, oh, but of course it's about Krishna consciousness. We're just focusing on these details. But the point is if that happens and you lose the Krishna consciousness, then that's material. You can't say, no, we're just being practical. Because since when is mundane practical for the soul? Right? You know, isn't there a saying, something like, he gained something but he lost his soul? Or?
Yeah.
But you understand, that's the principle. Because he worked, he got what he wanted, but in doing the process he lost him, you know, himself as the soul. So his character, everything is lost. So that's the thing Kamsa's worried about. He could, you know, if you're just using just niti, then, you know, like Duryodhana would use, then he would take care of this now. But the problem is because he has that training, he knows he's the soul, there's the higher principle. He knows that Dharma is actually what controls the laws. Niti is used within Dharma to just find the practical solution. So the Vedic is very practical, because it has niti, which is way more practical than anything anybody else has. But the point is it always has to be in the context of Dharma and Artha. Otherwise, if it's just used on its own, yes, it gets done what you want to get done, but it may be creating so many more difficulties. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, he's using a higher principle here. He's looking at the dharmic aspect. And you can see is that because from Dharma comes Artha. And so he's not going to get any artha from this. Because his whole idea is, you kill Krishna and then he lives a nice, happy, you know, carefree life. So he wants artha, he wants results. but he knows that this process won't get it. But if he's born, Krishna's born, he grows up to where he's an age where people can say, okay, he's an appropriate age. Then if he fights with him, then whether he wins or loses, his glory will remain. Right? Because for Kshatriyas, then that this aspect is important. Because otherwise, then what's the meaning of your authority if no one acknowledges it? Does that make sense? You know, you have somebody who is technically according to, let's say, the constitution or something, is the leader of the country. But his brothers come in and decide that he wants to run the country and kicks them out. So he's sitting out in the jungle somewhere in some little village under a rock. But technically, recognized by all the other countries, he is the authority. But what's the point? He's living in a village. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is without that recognition, he can't function. So for kings, then, they have to see this nicely. In the bodily concept of life, who's that? In the bodily concept of life, a person is karmanu bandha, or conditioned by karma. And as long as the mind is absorbed in karma, one must accept a material body. Sharira bandha, bondage to the material body, is a source of misery, klesha da. Na sadhu manye yata atmano yam asan napi kleshada asha deha. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.54. Although the body is temporary, it always gives one trouble in many ways. But human civilization is now unfortunately based on tanu mani, the bodily conception of life, by which one thinks, I belong to this nation, I belong to this group, I belong to that group, and so on. Each of us has his own ideas, and we are becoming increasingly involved, individually, socially, communally, and nationally, in the complexities of karmanu bandha, sinful activities. For the maintenance of the body, men are killing so many other bodies and becoming implicated in karmanu bandha. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami says that tanumani, those in the bodily concept of life, are papi, sinful persons. For such sinful persons, the ultimate destination is the darkest regions of hellish life. Ganta tamon dam. Right? Because even if they're engaging piously now, what's their purpose of being pious? To get facility to enjoy. So as they get that facility, it cultivates that enjoying mood. Then when that enjoying mood is cultivated, then what happens? One is not necessarily so pious. One is inclined towards sinful activity. And so then with time, it's just a matter of where the wheel of samsara comes around, and they're all the way on the bottom. So wherever you are in the material world, it's leading you down to the most hellish position. The material always does that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's always going to be. And the more we're absorbed in this, the more hellish it is for us. Because for the soul, the material condition is actually a hellish condition. We're sometimes thinking, everything's nice, but actually, for the soul, it's not actually nice. We just don't catch that. Okay. But as we become purified, then we start to see the difference between the two. Then we can understand what's hellish and what's not hellish. A human being is meant to understand the value of life, human life, which is a boon obtained after many, many births. Therefore, one must free oneself from tanumani, the bodily concept of life, and realize the supreme personality of Godhead. Right? So even here, the demons, by understanding, they get some benefit, but it's not that he's getting rid of it enough. You know, he's Krishna conscious. He's understanding the nature of the soul, but then the problem comes is that it's not favorable in Krishna conscious, not in devotion. So that will maintain him within the mundane sphere. So then there'll still be a problem. So at some point that has to be given up. Sukadeva Goswami said, deliberating in this way, Kamsa thought, Kamsa, although determined to continue in enmity towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, refrain from the vicious killing of his sister. Right? So, although determined to continue in enmity, right? So, that he's determined to do. But he's going to find another way to maintain his enmity and all that, rather than make trouble for his sister. He decided to wait until the Lord was born and then do what was needed. While sitting on his throne or in his sitting room, while lying on his bed or indeed while situated anywhere, and while eating, sleeping, or walking, Kamsa saw only his enemy, the Supreme Lord. Right? You're thinking of the Shema. Like that. Kamsa saw only his enemy, the Supreme Lord, Hrishikesha. In other words, by thinking of his all-pervading enemy, Kamsa became unfavorably Krishna conscious. Right? So he's Krishna conscious, but it's unfavorable. That's why it's not called pure devotion. So yes, he's becoming Krishna conscious. The methods he's using, these are bona fide methods. But the problem is because his method of Krishna consciousness is not favorable to Krishna, therefore it's not pure devotion. Because that's what Rupa Goswami says. You have to be Krishna conscious. That consciousness must be favorable, right? Because being Krishna conscious is what you want to be, right? That's the ultimate goal. But being conscious, then it is defined. It has to be favorable, not unfavorable. And it has to be free from karma and jnana. But not. So if any of these things are there, then it's not classified as pure devotion.
So we talk. There's some benefit in having an impersonal conception and meditating on that impersonal conception constantly. So what about an atheist who's opposed not to Krishna but opposed to impersonal conception? Do they get some benefit from being God conscious but in an impersonal way?
But you'd say in that way is all living entities are God conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Means, let's say the dog is looking for something to eat, but what's food? Is it what he gets to eat that's important, or is the nourishment that comes from that?
Mm-hmm.
So that potency is Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So actually all living entities are God conscious.
Mm-hmm.
But because they don't actually know it's God, then that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So here, what we'd say is the impersonalist, okay, there's some benefit, it's of a higher state, because they're actually conscious of God as God.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just God as the impersonal, God as Paramatma, the controller, the judge, the witness, that kind of element, or as a person.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say that's favorable. The other one, then, not really, because they're not accepting the position of God. So the point is everything being God, if they don't accept that, then how is it going to be beneficial?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, you could say the dog's probably getting more benefit than they are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why one has to be careful. Is just because there's intellect doesn't mean that it's actually a higher status of life. Because it's a higher intellect, but it's not actually using that intellect for anything positive. While, let's say, the dog, it has a lower intellect, but at least he gets something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he just does his dog stuff.
Mm-hmm.
While this other one, then he gets and has to disturb everybody else to do his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the atheist, his position, means it's like if someone's an atheist and it's just their own commitment and don't bother anybody else. Let's say they're sitting there at the table with friends, and someone's talking about something religious or some other thing like that, and it doesn't bother him, then, you know, okay, that's his own personal thing. But you generally find atheists feel it's their right to correct everybody else in the universe. So they're just a disturbance. You know, at least the dog will curl up and sit down for a while. You know, but, they never really. In a sense, they'll always be engaged in sinful activities, because if there's no supreme, how do you define law? So then law is just defined by what their circle of
it evolved over.
Yes, that's there, but it still has to be accepted, because you can say it evolved, but that means that it's moving in a direction, that it's So is evolution a positive thing? What if evolution is a negative thing?
There's no value, you know what I'm saying? It's just from their point of view, because there's no standard to judge.
But one's judging, saying that there's no judging.
All it is fitness, about reproductive, you know, superiority, about actually having an advantage towards spreading
reproduction. But then if that's there, then the guy who's, you know, big, attractive, and good-looking, and he's, you know, spends his time hanging out down at the spa with the ladies and impregnates them all, then actually he would be the, you know, actual, you know, how you say, what do you call it when you're developing? You know, the whole creation is developing. He's you know, way ahead of everybody else. Mm-hmm. So will this atheist agree to that his wife is getting pregnant by this ridiculously good-looking, handsome guy that he has no chance at, you know, on that platform with? You know, so that's the whole thing, you know. So they're saying all these things, but how do they know it's a progress? Or it's you know, or that it's actually, because they're saying, okay, that there is this thing, but where does the concept come from that what's good for procreation is important? Why is that there? Why do we consider that an important thing? Why should procreation be important? Mm-hmm. You know, you say the species dies out, but it's just like, you know, as if modern man cares about that. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. You know, that parking lot, you know, just wiped out the natural habitat of that particular bird that flies in from 2,000 miles away, you know, every winter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hey, Walmart needs a parking lot. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
You know, so how is this defined? Mm-hmm. You know, and why is it that it should be published and people should read it? Why is that? So he's making judgments and law on that himself. So therefore, who's going to agree with him? You know, because there's a good chance that the guy, you know, who you know, drives the muscle truck with the shotguns in the back and all that doesn't agree with him. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's going to have to find other like-minded persons, and so then they're going to do that, they're going to establish, and if they happen to be in some way in the media, then they'll profess their points and this way try to change things. So it is just about what they think. It's not to do with, because when you have the laws of nature, if you take human out of it, is it evolving? Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, is it fixed? I mean, that one BTG article, it shows this one really, you know, what they'd call now real prehistoric fish. Mm-hmm. And it shows it, you know, 300 million years ago or whatever it is, something ridiculous. Then it moves the next square over, you know, 100 million years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they go to the next square, you know, whatever it is, you know, 10 million years ago. It still looks exactly the same. Then they show the same thing today. It looks exactly the same. It hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. So what is the meaning of, is that logical? Is everything else is changing, but this fish is not? What happened to this fish? You know, did he miss out on something? Hey, he could have been driving a Ferrari now, smoking a Havana cigar, you know, like that, but he's not. He's stuck just being this fish, and all his friends, you know, they're all out there, you know, living it up on the Upper East Side, you know, like that. So what's going on? You know, so that's the thing, is that if you get down to it, it's just their own. The problem with authority is then their mind, they're not free to do what, think what they like. Mm-hmm. That's the taste in atheism and coming up with all that, is that it's actually your call. You know, mm-hmm. just like the guys down at the pub. Mm-hmm. After a few beers, then they, you know, every evening solve all the problems of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. Mm-hmm. And that makes them feel good. Mm-hmm. And then they go home, and then the wife complains, you know, did you bring the cauliflowers? And he didn't, and, you know, all this. And he can't even solve that. But at the pub, you know, you know, it was good, you know. Yeah. So it'll always come back to karma and jnana. Mm-hmm. And that always comes back to the living entity wants to control and enjoy. Mm-hmm. So it's just the modes of nature, how you want to control, how you want to enjoy. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments, Srila Rupa Goswami is described the finest pattern of devotional service as Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.167. Or cultivating Krishna conscious favorably, Krishna consciousness favorably. Kamsa, of course, was also Krishna conscious, but because he regarded Krishna as his enemy, even though he was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, his Krishna consciousness was not favorable for his existence. Krishna consciousness, favorably cultivated, makes one completely happy. So much so that a Krishna conscious person does not consider Kaivalya Sukham, or merging in the existence of Krishna, to be a great gain. Right? So, here we see is that Prabhupada's very strongly bringing this point to the front. But we've seen in some places, like Narad Muni's, pointing out the glories of being Krishna conscious, even for these demons. So one may say, so then why do we make this such a strong point? Because by being Krishna conscious, they're freed from all material involvement, and they'll attain to the liberated platform. Right? So all material things are solved by being Krishna conscious. But for the devotee, because he's seen the taste of liberation is not very great, therefore it's not a great gain. But the taste in Krishna consciousness, now that's special. Therefore, Krishna consciousness will solve all material problems. But being favorably Krishna conscious will then actually give satisfaction to the soul. Therefore, since it's the same endeavor anyway, why not do it in favorable Krishna consciousness? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So we're saying, okay, let us say we're cooking something. So by cooking, then you'll relieve hunger. Okay? Now, if I cook favorably, it'll relieve hunger and it'll be nice. But if not, it'll just get rid of hunger. Does that make sense? So
it adds a taste.
Yes, it adds a taste.
So tasty liberation could be like a different taste.
It's not a taste. We're talking about you cook, but it's no taste. But at least it's how you say, nourishing. Yeah, it's like after the meal, and someone says, how did you like dinner? And, oh, it was filling. Yeah. So we're talking.
Very subtle.
Extremely subtle. You couldn't even find any taste. Extremely subtle. Extremely subtle and filling. Extremely subtle. Yes, yeah, so therefore the whole point is Krishna consciousness is always of value. But of Krishna consciousness, then what's connected to Krishna? Just like you see as Prabhupada says, those who follow the Vedic culture, they'll always get better benefit than those who don't. And that's generic. He's including everybody. You know? And then he'll point out that, you know, those who have that kind of faith and all that, and he'll mention Mahatma Gandhi, he'll mention Shankaracharya, he'll like this. They follow the culture. Right? But he's pointing out that it's superior to non-Vedic in efficiency. But then when he talks about the Vedic culture, then those who follow properly and everything like that. So then, you know, how you say, our face on the bills drops off here. Right? You know, then you like that. So you have to be, you know, according to the Shastra and this and that. Then within that, the purpose of the Shastra is to be God conscious. You know, in the, you know, the proper way. So that will then Shankara drops off. You understand? So then that's how it goes. So it can be used in both of these things. In this case, it's not seen as something very great, but we shouldn't miss out that the Krishna consciousness is the special part. It's the unfavorable, that's the weakness. Not, oh, it's unfavorable, so we, you know, we're not even going to regard it. No, the Krishna consciousness is good. The unfavorable, that's the part that's a problem. Does that make sense? You know, so if you remove that, then it's good. You know, it's just like someone gives you the subji, and there's a big chili sitting there in the subji. So it's not that, okay, we can't, no, it's just take out the chili and then it's good. Does that make sense? Or for some others, it may be the other way around. You know, where's the chili? You know? Yeah. It's subji, but it's not favorable. It's not favorable subji.
And they cut it up small with all the seeds.
Oh, yeah, that's another way. So, you know, so, whichever way. But the point is this. You know. Kamsa, however, because of cultivating Krishna consciousness in a different way, that is, inimically, was uncomfortable in all the affairs of his life, whether sitting, sleeping, walking, or eating, but he was fully absorbed in the Lord. So that has a taste. Otherwise, then why would he do it? But it won't be comfortable because it's not being favorable to Krishna. Therefore, all situations which are Krishna, he's not dealing in a favorable way. Naturally, if you're sitting in a room with someone that you're inimical towards, it's not comfortable. Okay. Whether sitting, sleeping, walking, or eating, he was always in danger. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. A non-devotee or atheist also cultivates God consciousness by trying to avoid God in everything. Right? So that. But this is still them here. It won't get to you. For example, so-called scientists who want to create life by a combination of chemicals regard the external material elements as supreme. Such scientists do not like the idea that life is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. As clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mamaivamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta. Bhagavad Gita 15:7. The living entities do not arise from a combination of material elements, such as earth, water, air, and fire, but also are separated portions. Oh, but are separated portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can understand the position of the living entity as a separated portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By studying the nature of the living entity, one can understand the nature of the Supreme Godhead. So if you understand the living entities coming from the Lord, then you can understand God's position. It's not anthropomorphic, it's that the living entity is looking for happiness. But because he's so small, he becomes covered. But God being unlimited, therefore he's always happiness. He is existence. He is all these things. But the jiva is looking for those, so that's the natural position. So why is that? Because they're coming from the Lord. Okay. Since the living entity is a fragmental sample of the fragmental sample. But because the atheists are not interested in God consciousness, they try to be happy by cultivating Krishna consciousness in various unfavorable ways. So technically all anybody's doing is engaged in Krishna consciousness. But it's not favorable to Krishna. It's only favorable for themselves. So they're trying to see where is Krishna in the area of their interest and then how they can enjoy that aspect of Krishna without Krishna's enjoyment. That's what every living entity is doing. You know, so if it's fame, they're saying, okay, because fame is Krishna. So where is fame available? Where can they see it? Where could they gain it? And then they make the endeavor to, they think about the fame, they make endeavor to gain that fame. But that fame's not in connection with Krishna, it's only for themselves. So it's unfavorable Krishna consciousness. So technically we just say there's Krishna consciousness, and then there's those who are the materialists. That makes sense? But every living entity, because of their nature, they have to be God conscious. They're conscious. And Krishna is consciousness, so therefore then if you're conscious, you're conscious of what? Conscious of Krishna. So that's how then these advanced living souls then see everybody connected to Krishna. It's just they're God conscious, but you know, in their particular way. Like that. And because they're non-judgmental, then they're not, you know, coming up with that. Does that make sense? So they can see how. Okay. What is it that this is a value to this person? So that's where they're trying to see Krishna. So then you show them how to see Krishna in that area favorably. So it's not you're changing something. It's you're trying to see where's Krishna in that. So you can say, but we're trying to make it accessible to them. What's accessible? Krishna is what's accessible, not the particular form of the culture that they're practicing. That's not the point. What's the point of the culture? Right? They're doing something in a certain way because that's where they see Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. It's not about what they're doing. It's about eating. You know, it means if they're saying, okay, this guy up here is eating wheat, that guy down there is eating rice. So it's not about wheat and rice. We, due to our, you know, lack of Krishna consciousness, we'll say it's about that. No, it's about nourishment that comes from food. That's the principle. You know, the nourishment, the taste, like this. So therefore, then, do that, connect that to Krishna. Offer that to Krishna. Right? So the taste is you're trying to get the best taste, but it's for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So you can say, but these guys cook like this, those guys cook like that. So, but the point is it's taste. But that comes from the modes, that comes from Krishna. So what they're looking for is Krishna. So there's not a separation. So therefore, you try to cook in the best way that you know to please Krishna. Then it's service, then they get purified. Now, what am I choosing? The best way that I know. But then with time, if there's somebody you like, then you try to, what do they like? How to, you know, do things for them. But if in the relationship it's always about yourself, can we say that we're dealing with actually very developed living entities? Culturally, we're talking about very self-centered, selfish people. You know, children, basically. Like that. So no one in any culture, anyone will consider that this is a development, or this is even a natural thing. It's a natural place to start. But if the thing is about yourself, you're actually using the negative instead of what's this new understanding, trying to add that to what you're doing. Rather than, you know, I don't want to, you know, anything in Krishna consciousness that adjusts with what I'm doing, I don't like. Rather than I'm trying to add something to what I'm doing. So it's not positive, it's negative. Does that make sense? So therefore we can understand it's not Vedic because it's not positive. So we see as Prabhupada and the Acharyas, they're able to take, they're looking for Krishna in a particular way. Right? So King Prachina Barhishat, he's a king. How will he look for Krishna? Right? What do kings look for? What aspect of Krishna are they looking for?
Power,
influence, fame, facility, enjoyment, you know, in a grand scale. So, what's Paranjana? All those things. Right? You know, he didn't talk about, you know, Miss Muffet and her Tuffet. Like that. You know. Now, if you were preaching to a spider, now you might use that story. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's the whole thing. They're using it there and then showing how to connect those things, show what's the temporary aspect of it. So they're looking for Krishna in this area, but they're not getting. Why not? Because of this temporary aspect of the mundane. So therefore, his power, his wealth, his influence, his enjoyment, is with time is being destroyed. That's a problem. So now how to solve that? You have to connect to the eternal. So because you've caught what it is that they want, and then you move it forward. This is the preaching that these Uttamadhikaris are doing. That's why they can talk with anybody, and whatever position they're in, find what works for them, and they don't tell them to adjust. And then you see with time, they always adjust. Right? Does that make sense? So we don't need this lower level of consciousness telling people, no, you don't have to adjust. No, you want to adjust, but that's not good. That's not Krishna consciousness. That's a symptom of affection when you make adjustments for others. You know what I'm saying? Technically, the affection between two people doesn't require any external adjustments. But the external adjustments are symptom of the affection. That's why it's used. You say, no, you know, yeah, you know, none of this flower stuff, you know, for your wife and that, and all these considerations and this and that. You know, she knows you love her. You don't have to say, you don't have to do. Nothing like this, you know. Why? Because I was just some guy living in, my mother's basement just playing video games and couldn't care less about anybody. You know, so therefore, that's who I am. Why do I have to adjust? Why do I have to do these? These are unnatural. These are, you know, not that, that. You know what I'm saying? But what will we say about this person? Uncultured, self-centered. So we have a philosophy of Krishna consciousness based on this. You know, the basement slob philosophy. Then how is that going to be progressive? It can't be progressive because it's not based on relationship with Krishna. It's based upon me and what I want to do. Or, you know, how you see it? I, me, mine. Like that. Yes.
And what are you talking about? Substance preceding form.
Yes. Yes. That's what we start with. But in relation to, but people are looking at that substance through a particular form. So we will refer to, because substance is only one, it's Krishna. But people are looking for that one substance, but through a variety of forms. So what form they're starting with, that's where you talk about. Like that. I remember talking with one guy. He was a, you know, I don't know where he was, but he was as a profession, he was a hitman. You know, because I'm a, you know, dressed as a sadhu, then, you know, as a priestly person. You can tell these things. So he just comes down. You know, the typical thing, the black suit, the this and that, the whole thing. You know, even the fedora, you know, the whole thing. It was in New York. It was JFK, you know. And he's saying that. And then, well, what are we talking about? Krishna consciousness. What is it in relationship to? That lady that just walked by in the tight dress. Because that's what he's looking at. And so then you talk about how what you're looking for is Krishna there. You know? So that's where it started with him. And he can't understand it. This girl walks by, you know, means I'm looking, but you're not looking. Why not? And then you explain. So you start there, but it's not that now, you know, all lectures are going to be on, you know, some lady in a tight skirt's backside, right? You know? Does that make sense? So you start and then you move on, just like Prabhupada is talking with that one gentleman about race cars and racing cars, but it's not now that's going to be the only thing. But it might be an opening in various discussions. You know? Oh, how did your last race go? This, that, nice. And then go into... So you start from the person, then move it into the thing. So, yes, but that's the Vedic system. It's not that's some new, just worked out by, you know, academics method of Krishna consciousness. No, this has been there since time immemorial. But they start from the top, from Anandamoy level of consciousness and the science that's there, rather than the Anamoy level of sensual perception and what I like to do. And maybe I'm willing to extend it a bit for the social consideration. So Anamoy with a seeming touch of Pranamoy, so it sounds more accessible to everybody else. I accept there's a supreme, I accept everybody can be happy and gain from it, so that makes it popular. Right? Because for Shudras, popular is the thing. You know what I'm saying? That's important.
Many times, when we act in some endeavor, we do it individually, but as we drift towards the form, we tend to focus on the forms and then forget the substance.
Yes. But that's what we've done since time immemorial. That's how we got here. Right? Does that make sense? So, when we switch to the substance, that's when we become Krishna conscious. Means we are Krishna conscious by what Prabhupada's talking about here. Everyone's looking for Krishna, but they don't actually know what they're looking for. They think that what they're looking for is that secondary form. But what they're actually looking for is Krishna, because Krishna is the one that gives the taste. Why should dead matter give the taste? So when Krishna is the modes, puts the taste into it, we all say this is good. When the modes change, nobody's interested. It's the same thing. It should give the same taste. But it doesn't. So Krishna is the taste, not the thing. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that seeing that it's Krishna, that's where the focus should be. So whatever the thing is that's where you have to, that's where the preaching is, that's where it goes. So I'm at work, how do I see Krishna? There's so many karmas, so like that. But why are they at work? Why does work work? Why does work get them money? Why does money do what it does? Why does facility, it's all Krishna. So you can be very Krishna conscious in any situation. Right? So one is chanting, you know, one is engaged in the direct activities, and then one is also understanding how all these indirect are also Krishna. And so then everything becomes Krishna. But then it doesn't stop there. It stops that I'm doing everything to please Krishna. So now that knowledge, which may have been before Jnana Yoga, so it might have been an aspect of mixed devotion, you know, just that interest in the knowledge, this and that. Now it becomes, I have all this knowledge of how Krishna is in these different things, so I can find how to please Krishna in everything. Right? So it goes from finding Krishna for my own benefit, finding Krishna that, you know, I become Krishna conscious, then it goes into to finding Krishna to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Sorry for the question. I will ask this question again when I need to. But are we, if we see how was Krishna breaking all the rules, no rules Krishna was following, but Lord Ramachandra is all rules, all regulations. Are we Rama conscious at the end or Krishna conscious? Someone one time made this question. Are the devotees more oriented towards Rama consciousness in the way that Rama presented with his life?
No, I got that. Okay.
You got the point.
Yeah. So I'm only saying that because time is short. Point is our line is that it's about the attraction to Krishna. So it's not about the rules. We simply use rules to express that attraction. And until attraction develops, to keep us on a favorable path for Krishna consciousness. So the point is we're both, but at the same time, ultimately it's Krishna. Because Krishna is Rama, but the point is, it's about Krishna. Because for us, it's about the attraction to Krishna. That's the important. Rules are only a way to express it. Because in Braj, Mother Yashoda doesn't cook breakfast at the same time every day, so that's a rule. So now is she just Rama conscious? You know what I'm saying? So why just take it that rules just means Rama?
Because, for example, one person wrote here in India, I will not give his name, and he said that...
Thank you.
I'm sorry for that because it's okay. He said that the devotees of Krishna, they in fact don't follow Krishna because Krishna is all freedom, all enjoyment, and they impose so many penalties and austerities and rules. And he said that from all the avatars, I only love Krishna. I don't like Buddha or whichever who performed austerities and penances of himself, while Krishna didn't perform any austerities of himself. And he considered him the greatest of all gods in India. He's a writer. So, and then he spoke about the devotees of Krishna. Someone asked him about Prabhupada's... He says, they are not on the level of Krishna. Because Krishna is all enjoyment. They might be on the level of Rama. Because Rama was so much dharma. So that's why this question arises from that platform, just because there's a background that I read all these things. So
it's there, but it's just why artificially try to force everything into those categories, you know? So, you know, just be like, let's say we're talking about, okay, food is nutritious. So when for their anniversary, the husband takes the wife out for dinner to some special place and all that. So are we looking at the consideration of the nutritional element of the food? Is that the most important element? You know, the wife knows he loves me so much because he took me to this natural, organic, you know, place that, you know, it's just about nutrition. So he really loves me. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is why, because food can be put into that category, but what about nutrition of the relationship? That's the nutrition we're talking about here. So when we're saying follow rules and regulations, Krishna is about enjoying, so we're following those rules and regulations that Krishna enjoys. So how is it not connected to Krishna? So the point is yes, Vaidhi Bhakti means Maryada, but that doesn't mean it's about Ramachandra. It means Maryada because we don't know. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, let's say you're learning to drive a car, okay? And you have a driving instructor. It's got two steering wheels, it's got two pedals, and it's everything like that, and the guy's constantly talking. Is that driving? But it's in pursuance of. So it's the rules of driving to get you to the point of driving. So how is it not connected? Oh, this has no connection with driving. Because driving is free, you don't have to have this guy, this and that. And it's going to follow the same rules. Right? You know, it's like, okay, you know, the top driver is, you know, a Formula One racer. Does he go around the track backwards? No, he follows the rules. He, you know, when they put on the yellow light, he's, you know, they caution. Red light, they stop. Green light, they go. So the whole idea is that there's no rule. That there's no rules is a misnomer. The point is it's not about rules, that the rule gets a particular result, and getting that result is actually the perfection. Is that if you do certain activities, it gets a result that pleases Krishna. That's why the science of bhakti. But someone may be on a level of that one hasn't come to that because one is not that God conscious. So therefore you follow the recommended rules that will help you be Krishna conscious and keep you from doing stuff that's not good for Krishna consciousness. So just to use, you know, Rama and Krishna and like that, we're not devotees of Krishna. It's like, where does this come from? You know? And so therefore this person is not even supporting that position, so then is that even within the realm of devotional service? So are they actually even on the platform of worship of Ram? So at least the devotees who are following the rules are at least on the level of Ram, you know, trying to get to Krishna, but the person making this comment, what level are they on?
Of enjoyment.
Enjoyment, but the point is enjoyment, what are they enjoying? So you're saying, oh, you have to enjoy. You can't follow these rules to enjoy. That's a rule. They're such, they don't actually know the philosophy enough that what they're talking about is all they've done is taken enjoyment and ritualized it. Unless you're doing this, it's not enjoyment. So they're also rules. Just the difference is, one comes from Shastra, one comes from their mind. So when it comes down, push comes to shove, we'll take the Shastra. Because otherwise, coming up with their own philosophies, that's a dime a dozen, right? You know, devotees might think it's something special. Hey, I came up with this, no one else is. But go to Kumbh Mela. How many million people are there? 40 million or something like that? Now, a lot of those are sadhus. So you got a million sadhus. Each one's got his own philosophy. So that means they got more philosophies than we got devotees, you know, let alone devotees coming up with their own philosophies. So, you know, it's going to take us generations to get up to that many that we could even have that many kind of mental speculators. So they're way ahead, you know. So what's so special? You know, you come up with this new angle. Ooh, you know, it's Ram. Why Ram? Why not Vaikuntha? That would be the general category that it's put into. You know, is it, so therefore we'll say, is it about sweetness or is it about majesty. That's actually how the Vaishnavas look at that top platform. Because majesty means maryada, and Krishna means sweetness. But that doesn't mean that one's not following rules that will get you to sweetness. Like if I say, okay, don't blend any Corella and put it into the cake batter. Like that. And then it says, why are you restricting me? You know, well, why can't I just do what I want? It's about enjoyment. What if I want to put Corella in there? Why do I want to put one? I want to put 10 Corellas in there. You know? Like that. In fact, we'll just slice some nicely and just put them on the top afterwards, you know? Like that. You know, so is that the path of enjoyment? You know? Point is it's a sweet. You want sweetness, therefore there's rules. You want majesty, there's rules. Because the point is the rule is only what is the natural form of the thing. Law means just what's the natural form. That's what's not caught. Is what Mother Jashoda and the Rajabasis do to please Krishna. That becomes the formalized rules of maryada in the other realms. So that's the whole point. Just playing with words, it's kind of like, hey, you know, nowadays, yeah, a dime a dozen might be expensive. Does that make sense? That's how you say it. A lira a dozen. Yes.
I think if we study deep enough Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami, that the conclusion is that Vrindavan atmosphere is a perfect blend of Partiva Rasa and Vaikuntha. Because majesty is there, everybody knows, so at a certain point all the Brijbasis they discuss, I think in the Tenth Canto we're going to come.
Yes.
And then they understand that whatever Krishna did, it's not human.
Right.
But it doesn't affect their love for him as a person.
Yes.
So it's a perfect combination of the process.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's not easy to understand.
No, because that's the point. It's the perfect combination. You know, I mean, what's the difference between that simple recipe that the chef cooks and when we cook it? It's simply the balance.
Yeah.
That's all. You know. So it has that perfect balance. So some aspect taken to more, that gets the other realms. You want to emphasize the majesty, you want to emphasize the rules, you want to, you know, the dharma and that taste. Because its point is Vaikuntha is also maryada, but it's about the majesty rather than the dharma. While Ram, it's about following the rules. Vaikuntha, they only follow rules, but it's about the majesty, taste of majesty gotten from that. But for Ram, it's the taste of following the rules. You know, because that limits, you know, he could be the king, but he goes to the forest because of dharma. You know, like that. You know, he searches after his wife because of the dharma. You know, he comes back and does his duty because of dharma. So that taste is there. So each of these realms, then it is that a certain aspect is being tasted more. You know, like Nrisingadeva, that anger thing, or the Kumaras, the Brahmacharya, or, you know, the different. So, but Krishna is that, like you said, that perfect blend. And that's why it's so hard to understand, because it has everything in it. So you say, oh, see, it has rules. But no, but they're in the background. So that's why it's all there. So all the aspects of every avatar, of every situation, they're all there in Braj. But they have their particular place. When you take it more, then you get, you know, that particular expansion. So that's why it's the hardest to understand, that therefore a chintaveda veda tattva. So with that, then it can be appreciated. So to do that, you have to be able to discriminate that they're Krishna conscious, but it's not favorable, so therefore it's not what we would practice. We'll practice what's favorable. But the position is everybody's Krishna conscious, so that's how you can introduce. In other words, everyone being Krishna conscious, all you have to do is introduce favorable Krishna consciousness. That's why it said you don't have to change the position. You have to introduce how to be favorably Krishna conscious in the area that they're already Krishna conscious. And the first step in being favorably Krishna conscious is to actually understand that Krishna conscious is what you're looking for. You know, they don't even know they're Krishna conscious. You know, it's just like, you know, yeah, it was happening tonight, but that happening, that was Krishna. And the other night, it's not happening, I don't know, it's just, you know, because Krishna's not there. So they're not following what Krishna would manifest through. Is that... Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nityananda Gaura Premananda.